following is an unrehearsed interview by John Clee with Gwen Coit for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The interview is being conducted in Maysville on January the 7th, 1986, around 3:30 in the afternoon. Okay, let's just start a little bit with your background then. Where are you from originally?
Kenley, North Carolina.
Kenley,
mm-hmm.
North Carolina. And you were raised in a tobacco business environment, or?
I was raised on a tobacco farm.
Okay.
My parents were tobacco farmers.
Okay, they were farmers.
Mm-hmm.
They grow flue-cured tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As you were growing up, were you involved in farming
yes.
at all?
Okay. Yes, I was involved in it. We worked in tobacco, you know, every summer.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the other little friends went to the swimming pool during the summer, but we worked.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it builds character.
I've talked to people about that season, but refresh my memory about the tobacco season mm-hmm. in North Carolina where you were at.
But you sit out the plants in April, and then I guess begin harvesting it around July 4th. And then you have probably 6 weeks to 8 weeks of harvesting it, and then you sell it beginning in the fall, usually in August. And it's over with by the time we come here to the market.
Which is now around November.
Mm-hmm. Around we usually come here the week before Thanksgiving.
now at that time when you all harvest that flue-cured tobacco, you pull it off the leaves,
mm-hmm.
or pull it off the stalk, right?
Yeah, we pull it off, prime it, mm-hmm. you know, a section at a time, sort of, where here it's the whole stalk. There you do like the bottom three or four leaves, whatever's right.
Mm-hmm.
And then how they used to do it was tie it on sticks, you know, twine,
right.
and then hang it in a barn and then put heat to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes it, all that I'm familiar with, it would take it a week to kill out.
Mm-hmm.
They first put real low heat to it and get it yellow, get it the color they want it. And then they turn it real high heat to it. By high heat, I guess it's like 100 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
That's total speculation. But I think somewhere around 100 and dry it out. Dry out the stem and the leaf.
Yeah. Now, they're not very big barns, is that right? Or that you're putting the heat to? Are they pretty good sized barns?
They're pretty good sized barns. And where here, you know, the barns are not airtight.
Right.
These barns are airtight. But not as big as the barns here, I wouldn't say.
You were, they used wood to burn the fire?
That's how they used to do it.
Right.
And then they started using oil and gas.
Is that what you're doing now?
Mm-hmm. I think it's probably oil
mm-hmm.
more than anything else.
So you were used to working in the back in the summers.
Mm-hmm.
And when you started thinking about careers when you were in high school,
mm-hmm.
had you already begun working in a warehouse or anything
no,
like that?
No, I never worked in the warehouse at all
uh-huh.
until I went to work with the company.
Okay.
Out of high school, I went to work as a dental assistant. That's what I went to school for.
Okay.
And then I got disillusioned with that and quit and moved back home without a job. And my father works with the grading service. He's a government grader. And he suggested I try to go to work somewhere in the back of business. And
mm-hmm.
so I applied with the job for a job at American and then went to work with them seasonal.
Okay, now tell me about the company, the American Tobacco Company.
Mm-hmm.
And you say you went to work for them seasonally. So what did you do during the season then?
Uh-huh. That's, you know, you work, you begin working with them like in the end of July, first of August.
Mm-hmm.
And then work with them until the market's over with here.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find something else to do till the next year.
Right.
That's how they, you know, generally hire people.
Now what were you doing for them in the beginning?
In the beginning I was in the factory. Which I worked where we bring in the tobacco that the buyer has bought, and we pack it in cardboard cubes.
Mm-hmm. Now were they all
ship it out
cardboard
ship.
When you started?
Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with Hodges. They started out using Hodges, but I've never
yeah.
worked on a Hodges in the market. We pack it in cardboard and then ship it to our plants.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you were working in the plant, you were doing working with machinery, actually?
Oh, no, I never. I'm not very mechanically minded, but I would work pulling the tobacco off the truck, weighing the tobacco. So you have to reweigh it when it gets into your plant, reweighing the tobacco and then grouping it by grades, and then getting it ready for the people to put in the cube. I'd never actually had to do any real heavy work.
Well, now, as you were doing this, is this where you were learning the difference between grades of tobacco and so forth?
Yes, it's a very good place to learn, because you're seeing what's already been bought and what the grade is on it. So you learn to relate the grade to the tobacco.
Now, the American Tobacco Company, as you looked at that tobacco as it came in, is there a certain trend that the tobacco takes, or obviously certain companies want certain types of tobacco according to their needs. Were you aware at that point of what the ultimate end of this tobacco was for? I mean, you knew they were going to use it for cigarettes, for example. Could you tell that they were getting only certain types, or?
I don't think I was aware of it, because I didn't know there was such a broad spectrum of tobacco. I didn't realize there were so many different kinds. And so therefore, when I did go out on the floor and see the different kinds, you can pick out the kind that you've been seeing,
right.
You know, the kind you're familiar with. That was real strange. I didn't think it would be that easy, but it is.
So from your knowledge of working in the plant, you had this conception, and then when you started going into buying, you could tell that that's the American tobacco.
Well, not that
easy.
It wasn't.
Right.
But it was a little familiar, more familiar than it would have been had I not worked in the factory. But I worked in the factory the first season, and then they put me in the office. And I worked in the office where we pay for the tobacco we bought and do the billing to, you know, fill out, ship the trucks. And you work on payroll, things like that.
Okay. At what point did you start? You wanted more work or year round work or to be a full time employee.
Yeah.
Well, what are your options then with American Tobacco? What kind of people do they? I mean, was that the only route to go then, was to be a buyer?
I think that's what everybody wants to be, or it was what I wanted to be when I, you know, first went to work, was to be a buyer. That was the ultimate.
Yeah. Well, now what about this, you know, there aren't that many women involved in the tobacco business. Mm-hmm. Now, when you had started, how many years have you been working with American?
I'm working on my eighth season.
Your eighth season.
Mm-hmm.
There were already some women buyers at that time?
At the time that I went to work, I believe there was a buyer with another company. I don't know who, but I believe there was one woman. And whether she's still working, I don't know. I have never heard from her since. But
I guess my question is, you know, you said that most everyone wanted to be a buyer. Was this really a realistic goal for you at the time? Did you feel like you weren't trying to break any, you know, traditions, or did you feel like you'd get a fair shake as far as progressing towards that?
That's a hard question.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a realistic goal, and I think my company has treated me more than fair. And if anything, I've got more than, you know, a fair shake. I have felt oftentimes that there have been people that have been working with the company longer than I have that haven't had the opportunities I've had. So they've been more than fair to me.
What about, did you start down at the Southern Market buying first before you came up here?
I actually started relief buying in Maysville first.
Is that right?
That was the first year that I did any buying at all, and it was a rations year, you know, where you hold up your finger. I don't remember what it was rationed at. I don't remember the price. I think like $1.66.
Let's talk. Well, okay, I want you to finish that.
But it was a very easy year. You know, I was able to get over my stage fright. If you ever do get over your stage fright, I was able to get over that. Because all you had to do was hold up your hand, and anything that was knocked to you, you know, you were glad to get.
Okay, well, let's talk about a couple of those terms for, you call it a ration year. What do you mean by that?
That means that it's all bringing the same price. The real top tobacco and the real low grade tobacco everything's bringing the same price, say $1.60. And all companies are bidding $1.60, and the auctioneer just rations it out to them.
Right.
You know, one for you, one for you, one for you.
So what you said is then, in the actual auction, you're just holding up your hand and just letting him knock, use the expression knock to you, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
Auctioneer gives you that,
mm-hmm.
Your percentage or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Now what about American on this market? Do they take a pretty big slice of the market, or?
Now that's another hard question. I don't know what you consider a big slice. But I think, you know, we buy in proportion here as to what we do all over the belt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, I think they have a percentage that they go by, and, you know, they try to
you
do
don't
that
know
in
that
other place.
Percentage offhand, mm-hmm. 20 or 30%.
Okay. That's one thing I wouldn't tell you if I didn't know.
Okay. Well, American is obviously one of the bigger buyers here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like a smaller independent. How does America classify itself as a?
We're a domestic company.
Domestic, right.
We're a domestic company. Reynolds is a domestic company, and then Philip Morris.
Mm-hmm.
And Philip Morris does not have buyer's representative.
Right.
All their tobacco is bought by, you know, by someone else, a dealer.
Mm-hmm.
And Brown and Williamson is domestic. They're not represented by a buyer. They're represented by, you know, a dealer buys their tobacco.
Right.
And then you have your dealers like Parker,
mm-hmm.
and Southwestern.
Okay.
They do not actually make cigarettes. They buy it for the purpose of, they buy their tobacco for the purpose of reselling it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're not going to use it themselves.
Okay. As a relief buyer then, there wasn't really, well, in that year that you were a relief buyer, there wasn't really too much that you had to know.
You know, you didn't have to know how to grade it once you got it,
mm-hmm.
or if you got one that wasn't up to your company standards, you had to see get some. You had to give your slice to somebody else that
mm-hmm.
time.
Right.
But as far as knowing the mechanics of the sale,
mm-hmm.
you didn't.
Right. Okay. Then the next year.
And then the next year, I didn't relief buy in the butcher that year,
mm-hmm.
but I came back here and relief bought here.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, a little more challenging because it wasn't rationed.
Right.
And they broke me in very slowly. I learned a little at a time.
Okay. Well, and as much as you can tell me, and, you know, again, if you feel like, well, that's something that, you know, I can't discuss, just feel free to say so. But now, when tell me about the mechanics of the buyers.
Mm-hmm.
You have a buying supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then there's, America has a set of buyers,
mm-hmm.
So if Maysville has two sets or three sets, there's an American buyer
for every
each set of that.
Mm-hmm.
Those.
Mm-hmm.
So all those individual buyers, of which you're one,
mm-hmm.
How's the reporting done? What's the administration of a company like that?
What's the chain of command?
Yes.
Okay, it's the three buyers, which for the three sets here.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have a head buyer who, you know, is over all three of us. And then there's a supervisor, and this is Mr. Ashley,
mm-hmm.
who is over our head buyer and over us as well. And then we have our leaf buying supervisor, which is, he is in charge of supervisors, and then, well, it's assistant leaf buying supervisor, and then leaf
mm-hmm.
buying supervisor. So.
Now, how does what the company needs and want, how's that expressed through this chain?
It's decided by our leaf buying supervisor. He tells it to the supervisor, and the supervisor then gives it to the head buyer, and then it comes to the buyer.
Okay. So just hypothetically, you don't have to tell me specifically what, but now American makes certain products,
mm-hmm.
and they know what their blend is and so forth, and what kind of tobacco they need. Will they tell you expressly what kind of directions might they give you? Again, you don't have to use what you do, but
mm-hmm.
for any buyer, would they tell you, for example, we want dark leaf, or we want a leaf that has a lot of, that we think will have a lot of flavor? How, what do they use specific grade names? They say, mm-hmm. 1-3 BRS or what?
Well, they don't use government grades, but uh-huh. we have specific company grades.
Mm-hmm.
And I would assume, and this is total assumption because I don't know how they come about that, but, you know, they will tell you they want so much of certain grades. And I'm sure that plays into how much they need for their blend.
Sure. But now they tell you what they want on their grades. They use the company grade names.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
So they tell you in advance how much they need of that, or they tell you to buy a lot of it, or
they tell you daily, how much they want. And it's according to, you know, the market, how the market is, how, you know, the quality of the leaf you've got on the floor,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, different variables.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a decision an individual buyer makes. That's something that he's told how much they want of so-and-so.
Yeah. They will tell you every day that we want you to buy X amount of pounds of tobacco,
mm-hmm.
of the type we want.
Not X amount, they'll give you a percentage.
Okay.
Of, you know, how much mm-hmm. is going to be sold.
Okay. What if that day and at the warehouse that you're at, they just don't have that type of tobacco? Now you know that in advance because you go and look at the tobacco beforehand.
No.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't have that type of tobacco, you don't you don't get what you were supposed to get that day.
You just don't buy it.
Yeah. You don't compromise.
Okay. Yeah, you can't pick up a lower grade or anything like that. Okay.
No.
That's the kind of thing that buyers get in trouble on, I
mm-hmm.
guess. Not
yes.
getting exactly. Now, okay. What do you use as a guideline? And you said that your company has a grade, and then the government has a grade on it and a price support.
Mm-hmm.
Do you pay any attention at all to the government grade as you're going down the road?
I don't get to see the government grade.
Mm-hmm.
We're, you know, file fifth and seventh in line, and
uh-huh.
I don't even get to see the ticket.
Okay, now you just mentioned that you file seventh in line. There's a pegging order of buyers,
mm-hmm.
and your position is seventh.
Mm-hmm.
And that deals with how much each company has bought in the past.
Mm-hmm.
On
in
this
the previous
market.
Year.
Okay. So you're, what, 5-6 feet behind the auctioneer?
Not that far.
Okay.
Usually I'm maybe 2-3 feet behind the auctioneer.
And he's
auctioneer. He'll be selling like right up there.
Uh huh. So you can see the tobacco from where you're
at.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you just make a snap decision
mm-hmm.
on whether that's what you need or. What about let me get into some of the dynamics then of that process. Do you have a certain buying style? Different buyers have different styles.
No, sir, I don't think I have a style.
Do you holler at the auctioneer?
I will holler at the auctioneer if it's necessary to get his attention.
Uh-huh.
But I bid basically with my hand,
mm-hmm.
you know, to show him what money I'm holding.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people will nod and wink and, and different things, but I bid with my hands.
Uh-huh. Was that something you just automatically did when you? How did you decide how to do that? Just what came natural?
That was easier for me.
Uh-huh.
I felt a little awkward, depending on, and I do nod. Like if he's taking my bids regular, I'll nod at him like that. But if in order to get him
mm-hmm.
to get his attention originally, I just throw my hand in front of him.
Okay. Now you said that. If he's taking your bids regularly,
mm-hmm.
you might be in a certain farmer's tobacco van.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of it's what you want.
No, that's not what I meant.
Okay.
I meant like on a pile, and he's started at $1.50 and has gone down to $1.45, and I've hit
mm-hmm.
him at 45, and then somebody in the front of the line goes 6, then
okay.
he looks at me, and then I'll nod.
I see.
And then I'll go. So if he's then I will nod. I don't.
Mm-hmm. Does that process really take place that much?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as far as the actual interchange. Of course,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't on the the markets where everything's just bringing one price. You don't have much of that, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But now, like on the market you're dealing with now, you know,
mm-hmm.
spring,
yes, sir, that happens
sets.
A whole lot.
Uh-huh. Okay. So he is actually going around the buyers. And,
mm-hmm.
and okay. How do you decide, are you instructed by the company, of course, again, back to their grades, Do they tell you this is all I want you to spend on that tobacco?
Yeah, you have your top money.
Okay. So you sometimes you might be at cross purposes with yourself. You've got what you can spend on it, and you also got a percentage you need.
Mm-hmm.
And they might conflict with one another. I mean, in other words, the tobacco might be bringing more.
Yeah, that would definitely be a conflict.
Right. Does that happen much? Or?
Yeah, sure it does.
Okay. Prior to a market opening, what kinds of discussions and so forth go on with the buyers? Do you all discuss, or does someone tell you, now this is the kind of money we think this tobacco is going to
be? Oh, no.
Or,
no, sir.
Uh-huh.
Never. And that's sort of, you know, we don't discuss the money before the market opens. We look at the tobacco and find out, you know, how much is on the floor and give a report of the quality of what's there. And then, you know, go from there.
Well, what I'm thinking, though, that there has to be some kind of guideline, you know.
Well, that comes from the powers to be. I don't know anything
about
the guideline.
But it's related to you, though, some way that, you know, we think this tobacco is in this. I guess what I'm really getting at is this opening day, it looks to me like there would be a certain amount of jitters on the opening day because you don't know what the other company is going to bid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you know how much tobacco you need.
Mm-hmm.
How do you decide how much to jump in at, or do you have any kind
I have my little buyer in to tell me.
Uh-huh.
But, you know.
Who usually takes initiative in that first day? Does one company bid more often, or kind of set the tone for what a sale will be, or in those quota years?
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the first day, who started this?
Who set the ration?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't tell you. Well, you have, you know, you can with the co-op. There's only, you know, so low that tobacco can go.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So you're. That does give you some kind of guideline.
It says some kind of guideline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, for example, in a ration year, you know what the government support is,
mm-hmm.
and you know you might just set in a little bit above that, so that the company's good for giving the back.
Mm-hmm. I don't know where who determines how where they sit in or how. I think it's probably. And this is, again, totally speculation, but I think it's probably set by, you know, the dealers who have to buy this tobacco to resell, and they know where their break point is as to how much, you know, what they can pay for it in order to make the money.
The profit.
Because they know what they're going to be able to sell it for.
And everybody just kind of falls in with that.
Mm-hmm.
There's another whole line of questioning I want to get on, but I don't know if there's. Let me continue that with these relationships we're talking about. We talked about your chain of command and how those things come down. Now, we talked about your career. Would you like to go the next step up and so forth? Is the goal for a buyer to be a buying supervisor then?
I think in most cases it probably is.
Mm-hmm.
In my case, I have no desire to be anything but a buyer. I enjoy what I'm doing right now. Of course, I make change. I haven't been doing this long enough to be wanting to do something else.
You're in your eighth season.
Mm-hmm, but I haven't been buying but only 2 years.
Oh, okay. You've just been buying 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
How did the opportunity, you said that you were a relief buyer.
Mm-hmm.
Did someone say, you want to go up, you know, we're going to go up north this time and we're going to let you go out on the floor? How did that happen?
I didn't know I was going out on the floor until I got, you know, I came here working in the office. And they tell you when you get here, when they get ready to go, they say, tell you to get your coat and come on.
Is that right?
You know, that's how you find out. But now when I knew I had my sale, they do tell you that you will have a sale.
Did you go through any kind of special training at all? I mean, did somebody
went
sit down
through
with
a
you?
Lot of special training.
Okay.
As far as, you know, structured training, you don't go to school or classes,
right.
But you spend a lot of time with your individual Nike, I rode around with the head buyer mm-hmm. and spend a lot of time.
Okay. You just followed that head buyer around then for a while
mm-hmm.
and asked him questions. And
asked him questions, and then he would put me himself in place of the regular buyer. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he would comment on what I had bought. And
yeah. Well, he'd tell you what you did right and what you did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of things, you know, could you do wrong, and what kind of things make it right?
Well, the quality of the tobacco you're buying.
Uh-huh.
You're you can be off style, off, you know, like we were talking a while ago, American, mm-hmm. you know, there's a certain style that is an American style. Mm-hmm. And you can be off style, you can buy wet tobacco, you can buy dirty tobacco.
Right.
Okay. So you can.
So you have to continually improve on recognizing really the tobacco you need mm-hmm. to buy or the company wants.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can you share with me what is the American style? I guess, you know, you could go down to the warehouse and pick out what American buys and make some kind of, you don't have to be very specific, but generally what kind of tobacco does American want?
I would say good color, thin. I think it's classy tobacco.
Uh-huh.
I think we like a good line of tobacco, but it's hard to describe it in words. You
right.
have to show it.
Mm-hmm. Is there a noticeable difference between what American wants and maybe what R.J. Reynolds is buying and so forth?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do in some styles. We do cross in some
yeah.
grades, but I think there's a difference.
But in others, there is a noticeable. You might. You know, of course, I'm sure you don't do this because when you get down, you want to leave the warehouse. But if you walk back down the road and saw the tickets that were on each bale, you might say, "We wouldn't have bought that," or,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if it by another company.
No, you don't do that.
Well, I know you don't be critical.
But,
right, but the thought would pass you. I mean, that would be a true statement that there would be certain tobacco, obviously, that they bought that you wouldn't.
That is not our style.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's not your style. When you got out on the floor, and was there any resistance at all, you know, or did you feel any because you are a woman?
Yes. I felt surprisingly more resistance from people in the younger men.
Mm-hmm.
The older gentlemen, who I thought would be set in their ways
mm-hmm.
and accepting me readily on the whole.
Uh-huh.
But the younger men, I think I was more of a threat.
Now you were in competition for your jobs, maybe. But what about, can you tell me any stories, or is there anything sticks out in your mind as far as, do you remember, now, there, when I was down in the market just earlier in the year, there were two women buyers, I think, in your set, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
How many women buyers are in this market now?
Just two,
okay, so you're in the same.
Mm-hmm. More the same shit with the other woman.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
How do farmers take you? Have you ever heard any comments?
Most of the farmers think you're there selling tobacco. I can be walking before a sale, you know, looking
uh-huh.
at tobacco. And they'll say, "Is this your tobacco, honey?" And, but that's the farmer. I assume they accept me because, you know, after
yeah.
the sale's done, I've never had anyone come up and be critical of me. And say,
well,
you shouldn't be in there buying my tobacco.
Well, has any, I guess, no one that's ever said much to you about, you should have paid more for this, or buyers don't really have too much contact with the farmers, do they?
You're moving so fast.
Right.
That you don't have that much.
Mm-hmm.
I have more contact before the sale when I go in and walk
right.
around and look at. And that's one of the interesting parts. I enjoy talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think they're really neat people. They're hardworking people.
Right. I was with a buying supervisor for an independent, and they didn't know that he wasn't working anymore. It was Mr. Darnell.
Mm-hmm. Gilbert.
Yeah, Gilbert. And a farmer got after him while I was there.
Mm-hmm.
We lowered this price of this tobacco, and you're still not paying anything for it.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't catch very much of it because you're not
mm-hmm.
really recognized, I don't guess,
mm-hmm.
As a buyer.
Mm-mm, I don't catch very much.
Mm-hmm. What about the reaction from buyers of other companies? What kind of reaction do they have? Or what kind of reaction do they have?
But for me being a woman?
Uh-huh.
I think a lot of them are surprised. They didn't think a woman could do it, but there's no reason why a woman can't do it as well as a man. Absolutely none. It's just, I guess they didn't think women could think fast enough to do it.
Uh-huh.
But I believe they were surprised that I do as well as I do do.
Well, I guess that's primarily the main thing that a buyer's doing is thinking on their feet.
Mm-hmm.
And spending a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And hoping that, you know, someone's not mad that they spent it wrong, I guess. Picked the wrong. But of course, that happens with any kind of buyer.
Mm-hmm.
What about the relationship to the auctioneers? Did auctioneers give you a hard time, or did you feel like they were?
No, I've had one auctioneer who was real ugly to me. He told me I should have just be at home in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I belong. But he's the only one that's ever been verbally ugly.
This is side two of a tape with Gwen Coy, and we were talking about the relationship to the auctioneer, and you said that there was one individual that was actually
mm-hmm.
ugly. I wanted to get into that, but go ahead and continue that.
I think most people felt like the auctioneer would favor me,
mm-hmm.
but that's not true. If I've been shown any favoritism, I've never known it.
Well, that's an important relationship between the buyer and the auctioneer.
Sure.
And
mm-hmm.
a buyer can really have problems with an auctioneer that's not.
Mm-hmm.
In this auction system that we're talking about, there are times when you and another buyer hold up and you're bidding the same price,
mm-hmm.
and you just stop there. Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's up to the auctioneer to decide.
Mm-hmm.
Who
gets it.
Yeah.
And he bases his decision on, well, who got the pile before that, and who, you know, who's buying more at this particular time. And
Have you ever had to talk to an auctioneer later and say, I haven't been getting enough? Or
no.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, you probably think you've been treated fairly.
Mm-hmm.
That puts a lot of pressure, I would think, on an auctioneer, particularly if there's more.
Yeah, I think he does not have an easy job.
Yeah. There's
several. And there's some good auctioneers,
mm-hmm.
and then there's some mediocre auctioneers. But there's a lot of auctioneers that know your style of tobacco. And it's, you know, they don't know when to look at you. And then
right
their son would just don't even take the time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, they've kind of come up the same way you have, more or less. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Now they are employed by the warehouses.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
What kind of relationship do buyers have with warehouses? Are you ever wined and dined? And,
very seldom. Let's see, we had the Board of Trade dinner.
Right.
I think the warehouse has paid for that, but that's the only time I've been wined or dined in my warehouse this year.
Yeah. They don't try to,
mm-hmm.
of course, you know, they have a vested interest.
I think, you know, I don't expect them to, because
mm-hmm.
Anything that I do, I'm my company's paying me for it.
Sure, sure. Well, but they do want, you know, they, if you have a certain percentage to buy that day and you visit, almost every warehouse,
mm-hmm.
I guess, during the course of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't visit every one, but a third of them, since there's three sets of buyers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you alternate the next day, that set will go to another set of warehouses.
Mm-hmm.
So in the course of a week, you'll hit all the warehouses.
Yes, sir.
You know, I guess warehouses would, warehousemen and warehouse persons, because there are women warehousemen too, they're not. They haven't ever lobbied to say, won't you buy more tobacco at my place instead of over here? Or
no, they haven't to me.
Okay. I was thinking, and you mentioned the example of the auctioneer that said something to you. Are you prone to, do you hear a lot of sexist kind of comments, and how do you react to that? You know, let me go on with the question a little bit. Of course, any of us that work, there are, you know, women are in various fields of endeavor, but in a business like yours, it's kind of a little fraternity, more or less, because you travel from one place to another and you're in a strange city and so forth. Was it important for you to be accepted by these other people, or is it especially difficult? You have to let a lot of things slide over, or you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Well, it is important for me to be accepted, but I think a woman's makeup is different. I think a woman's different from a man, and things are going to affect her different. You know, what might bother a woman doesn't bother a man.
Uh-huh.
And I've adjusted real well,
mm-hmm.
I think. And I think the people that work with me adjusted to me real well, because they knew they couldn't say things to me that they could say to another man.
So you've let them know in one way or another, these are the kinds of, you know, I object to those kind of things, or
mm-hmm.
I guess specifically.
I've never had to say anything, but they can
mm-hmm.
tell when I don't like it.
Okay.
And they are basically a good bunch of people.
Yeah,
the people
yeah.
in the back of business.
Right.
Are good people.
I guess maybe the question I'm asking is, I'm sure they were used to acting a certain way in this
mm-hmm.
this all male fraternity, and
mm-hmm.
then all of a sudden, you know, there are starting to be women in this fraternity,
mm-hmm.
and maybe
they're having to clean up their act a little bit.
That's what I
clean up their language, and,
uh-huh.
and that's it's frustrating though to work with a bunch of men, because they never know when to put paper towels on the rack, and
uh-huh.
that's left up to you.
Right,
and they're basically helpless as far as housekeeping, so
mm-hmm.
you have to do all the cleaning in the office and things
right.
like that. But
mm-hmm. so you've made some adjustments too from that
mm-hmm.
from that angle.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have? I guess you are you telling me then you have or haven't experienced a lot of jibes and jokes about being a woman?
No,
you haven't.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell that men the people are acting a little differently when you walk into a room?
No.
Okay.
I think if I've experienced any, it's been good natured,
mm-hmm.
any kidding that I've
right.
experienced.
Yeah. You don't feel like then that, you know, there's been any kind of, and I'm not asking this, you know, to be accusatory or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but it is, you know, in a lot of ways you're blazing new ground too, just like, and I just wondered how much of a struggle it was, or if it was very much of a struggle, or continues to be a struggle.
It's not been easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier now than it was. Because I think I've adjusted to being away from home and to, I have some really close friends in this business. Even though they are males, they're my close friends.
Sure.
And I have a lot of uncles. Because they do take care of me.
Yeah. Have some of the, I guess some of the people have kind of taken that kind of attitude that, you know, as out of friendship,
mm-hmm.
That they help out or,
mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me get into that line of questioning then. This is a particularly, and I was about to make a sexist statement, I guess, you know, I don't guess it's any harder on a man than it is on a woman. It's just a little more different in our society. But to a certain extent, you become a gypsy.
Yeah, you do.
You move up here the week before Thanksgiving, so you're, I guess you go back home during the holidays, but you're back and forth, and
mm-hmm.
you, in your case, you rent a little apartment,
mm-hmm.
which, because you're only renting it for a short time, you're not going to spend very much time or effort on.
Not at all.
What's that do? How does that affect you personally?
I've lost a lot of good boyfriends. I think I handle it better than the men,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of men are just pure helpless. They uh-huh. they don't know how to wash their clothes or can do no cooking on their own. And for a lot of men, it is a chance to get away from home. But I am more independent as far as I can do my own cooking. And but now and then, I guess men don't have as hard a time when their car breaks down as I do. But you just have to adjust. I liked it better before I got married.
Now you started out and you were single.
Mm-hmm. I just got married this past September.
Right. Was that, how did that pose, did that pose any problems for you as a woman? Here was a single woman and here were a lot of men away from home and
mm-hmm.
some of them were single. Has it changed any? Has there been any transition between being single and married, or as far as the way you were treated?
No.
Okay.
Because I didn't make it a habit to go out with people that I worked with.
Right.
Unless we went out as a group.
Sure.
I went out with very few tobacco men one-on-one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But you say it is more of a strain now that you are married.
Mm-hmm. As far as...
Yeah, you miss your...
You miss my husband?
Sure. Does it cause that much of a strain that you think about at times, I might do something else? Or
no, it hadn't yet.
Right.
No, it hasn't been that bad yet.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully it won't. Because I want to continue working. I love my job.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
What is there? What's special about being a tobacco buyer? What is?
Oh, it's you never doing the same thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
It's you're working with new people, and you feel like you're really doing some good. You know, you're really accomplishing something.
Is let me finish that line of questioning about being away from home.
Mm-hmm.
You're on a salary.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you get some expense money and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So you make conscious decisions about, you know, you might some people live at a motel and other people try to rent an apartment to save some money.
Mm-hmm.
That's all a personal kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So your approach is
to rent an apartment.
Rent an apartment try to save some money.
Yeah, so and that hasn't changed since I've gotten married. I felt that way before I got married.
So you probably do a lot of your own cooking and
mm-hmm.
don't eat out every night.
Mm-hmm.
But now
very
there are people in the business that will eat out most every night and
stay in a motel.
Right. What do you do? You've been on the Maysville market now. How many times have you been to Maysville in this eight years?
I was here my first 2 years with the company.
Uh-huh.
I was gone for two, and then I'm back for my, this is my third year back.
Okay. Have you, you've dealt exclusively in the, I can't even think of, the air-cured. You haven't dealt in other Burley markets, the air-cured Burley.
Well, in Maryland is air cured. It's not Burley though.
Yeah.
And that's Maysville, and then I was in Danville, Kentucky,
mm-hmm.
on Burley Air Drive, and in Shelbyville, Kentucky.
Oh, so you've seen different markets there.
Mm-hmm.
You've been on different markets. What does a North Carolinian think of Kentucky?
Mm-hmm.
What are your impressions of the back of the different cities or?
Well, there's more to do in Shelbyville. It's closer to Louisville. You're
right.
Closer to a big town, and
right.
Louisville's a nice town.
Yeah.
Kentucky is a nice state. It's a beautiful state. I had never been to Kentucky in the summertime until last year,
mm-hmm.
and it's really pretty in the summer.
Yeah.
But as far as wintertime, you know, this is pretty dreary around here.
That's true.
But
well, that, you know, does that add to the blahs of the job, or
mm-hmm.
You just see it as part of? For example, right now we're in the first full week of January. Are you anxious for the market to end? And
no, not yet. Mm-mm.
Not ready to really.
I'll be anxious about the first week of February.
Yeah.
Because. If it drags on that long, then I will be getting pretty bored.
Right. Well, now there's a pecking order there too, as far as buyers are concerned. When the market closes, now are you one of the buyers? How do they decide who goes? If you know who leaves first?
I don't know, but I've left the last 3 or 4 years.
Oh. So you decide.
I need to find out how they do decide that.
Okay. I guess that's handled differently too.
I think that's totally it. You know, supervisor and a lead purchase director.
Okay.
And I'm sure they have good reasons for basing it, for making it.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. There was another line of questioning I was going to before we quit. Oh, you're a tobacco person and talking about the tobacco industry in total.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about being part of the tobacco industry?
How do I feel about my future?
Well, not particularly. Well, yeah, I guess that's a pertinent question. Do you, No, there are some, I don't know, you could call them reformers or zealots, whichever way you want to look at it, that really think people involved in the business are really doing bad things because they deal with tobacco and cigarettes and so on and so forth. Have you ever felt any of that?
I don't feel it as far as my job. I'm a smoker. I feel it from that. My sisters just cannot understand how I can smoke, and one of them will not allow me to smoke in her house. So for the first time, I'm, you know, being embarrassed about being a smoker.
And well, now, that goes right into the other question, then. How does that make you feel about your future and, you know, in this kind of business?
I have no qualms about being in the tobacco business,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, everybody's got to do something to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to like what I do. And for a woman, it's good money.
Mm-hmm.
It's given me a lot of opportunities I never would have had.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's not like you're traveling to exciting places, but you do, you know, you make some really good friends. And in here, you know, I would have never seen Maysville, Kentucky.
Right.
I'd have probably never seen Lexington or Louisville.
It is a position with quite a bit of responsibility, too, I guess.
As far as the buying?
Well, you're a very responsible person. You're dealing with a lot of money, and
it is a very responsible position. And I think I'm proud of myself that they have that faith in me.
Right.
And I want to do everything I can to not make them regret ever trusting me. But it has given me a lot of opportunities. And the Maryland market, that's an especially interesting market. That's a whole nother breed of people.
I want to get to that about the different types of tobacco that you dealt with, but I want to continue here just for a minute about your, do you have, in the few years that you've been in the business, have you seen any kind of adjustments or changes that particularly alert you or alarm you, or
as to how the tobacco business is going?
How things are going to go, or?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we've all seen it. You know, it's, nobody knows what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly don't. I have, you know, some very, I have my opinion of, you know, where they went wrong, but I sure can't tell them what they could have done different.
Right.
But that's totally opinion.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me ask you, you're talking about the style of tobacco,
mm-hmm.
and flue-cured tobacco is, I guess, significantly different than
mm-hmm.
air-cured.
Mm-hmm.
Really, you have to learn, it's like going out of two different books, isn't it? You work on both markets.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's totally different.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about those differences a little bit.
Well, it's color. The, you know, burley color is dark, and then blue cured is bright leaf.
Mm-hmm.
And it's handled differently. You know, it's sold in sheets.
Right. You get one certain quality at a time in the southern market because it is being harvested differently, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Like you'll get everybody's lugs at one time,
right.
And everybody's cutters.
Mm-hmm. Do tobacco people have a preference, and is this a more challenging market because you do have different types there on the floor?
What, the flue cure?
No, the air cure up here.
Mm. Flue cure is more challenging.
Is it? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We'll explain
to
that.
Me, that's where it's harder. You've got different, here, you know, how it's supposed to be, you come in and you have one farmer's, you know, his blinds and then his cutters and then his leaf and tip, you know, laid out.
Mm-hmm.
There, this week you may have this man's lug, but and you're gonna have maybe four piles of that, but then the next four piles are gonna be this man over here's cutters, and the next one, next eight piles are gonna be, you know, somebody's leaf, and
because
it's a lot of different
kinds.
A lot of it's you have more different things to deal with. It was harder for me.
Was it? Now, does that market last longer than ours?
Mm-hmm, yes, sir. It runs from the end of July, and it's usually over with by the middle of October.
That's because there's more tobacco involved, or it's a longer harvesting season, or
there's more tobacco involved, I believe. Now,
right.
I don't know.
Well, how does, talking about your gypsiness that you
how does that run your schedule then? You're buying tobacco there in July up through October.
The end of October.
Right, and then you have a little break and come up here before Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm. I think I had 2 weeks off, which when I came up here.
Right.
And then I'll be here until the market closes and go to Maryland in the middle of March.
So you do work another market after this one?
Mm-hmm. Not everybody does, but I do.
Now, why is that so late?
Well, the Maryland crop is actually the same crop that we're doing. It's last year's crop.
I see.
This is just, that'll just be their turn to sell it.
Oh, is that the way it always works then? They're always running a kind of a year behind or
mm-hmm.
a season behind or something?
Mm-hmm.
And the way the market's set up, that's just their turn to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I understand it, they don't have support prices.
Mm-mm.
So how does that, what kind of problems are, how does that,
well,
how
that's
does that do
really,
for a buyer?
Mm-hmm. It's a lot more challenging. And it's, you have to really, you're going totally on your judgment.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, all their tobacco is tied in little hand-tied bundles.
Little
hand-tied bundles. Little hand-tied bundles.
Uh-huh.
And it's, and then a great old big pile, which here would weigh 700 pounds.
Right.
There isn't going to weigh but 250.
Is that all right?
Mm-hmm. It's real light.
Uh-huh.
It's,
Now, is there an American style of that type
mm-hmm,
of tobacco?
Certainly.
Okay. So as an American buyer, then there's a certain thing you're looking for in flu cured,
mm-hmm.
and a certain thing you're looking for in air cured, and then a certain thing you're looking for with
mm-hmm.
the Maryland tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody coordinating all these things knows what everybody's looking for and what they need and so forth and how that fits into the.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who that coordinator
yeah,
is. I don't think they've found him yet.
Yeah, okay.
Because, you know, it all works out. I guess this was, you know.
All paying, I don't know, the American products,
what
we're
make?
A consumer.
We make Carlton's.
Mm-hmm.
We make Lucky Strikes and Lucky Goes to War.
Okay.
Pall Mall. And Territon. We make half and half smoking tobacco.
Now, what is the most of the tobacco you're dealing with? You, of course, most of it is going to end up in cigarettes. Is that
mm-hmm.
is that right? There's
yes.
I'm interested in this Maryland tobacco. Using last year as kind of a measure, what kinds of prices did it bring last year?
I believe their average last year was like $1.50. I'm not sure.
So even without a support program, the
mm-hmm.
tobacco, but. Does a farmer not get very much return because it's so light? Does it take, I mean, do they not get very many pounds per acre? Or
I don't know how that runs.
Uh-huh.
They bound to be able to get, you know, they must be making some.
Oh, sure.
They keep doing it. But it's not nearly as heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure it doesn't yield as much as burley tobacco does.
Are you, your husband's involved in the tobacco business.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how y'all met? Or?
Mm-hmm. We met in Wilson, on the tobacco market in Wilson, North Carolina.
Wilson, North Carolina. And he was, what was he doing on that market?
He was relief buying, and I was relief buying as well that year.
Uh-huh.
And he was relief buying for Helen Cotton, which follows right in front of us in line.
Right.
So that's how we met.
So this is one time you did go out with another.
This is one of the exceptions. The last one.
Shouldn't
I
have made that exception. Or that was the last exception.
Yeah, it was the last exception.
Got that for the record. And so now he's, what? Where is he at right now?
He's in Springfield, Tennessee. They have a plant in Springfield, Tennessee. So he works there year round. And unless he happens to be in North Carolina, he goes to North Carolina for the flu cured market, or at least part of it.
So he is buying still, son?
Uh-huh. He's still really fine. He is he's involved in a lot in customer relations with Helen Cotton as far as what they're who they're going to sell their tobacco
now for. Now they would be called the novice. They're an independent.
And they're a dealer.
A dealer. I mean,
that all the tobacco they buy is for resale.
Right. Now you said he worked at a plant though. Are they
mm-hmm.
actually?
It's where they process the tobacco they bought,
right.
And are packaging it for their customers.
Sure.
And he would be really interesting for you to talk to because
yeah,
there's
like
so many the the dark air tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
It's really intriguing to find out about their customers, and they sell some to Africa, and over there they use it for barter. They use the tobacco, and in some places they eat it. So it's pretty interesting.
Well, how does this work out for you all as a family situation? Mm. You're from North Carolina.
We get together on the weekend.
Okay.
He, you know, generally comes up on the weekends if the weather's good, and he's not having to work on Saturday. And then over Christmas we went, spent some time in North Carolina, and then some time in his parents' home.
But now when you're now Maryland, how long does that last?
2 months.
Gee, so you're really almost committed full time. Mm-hmm. You have a break then?
From May and June?
Or?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll have to come back and do some sales work where, you know, we're involved in promoting our products. So.
I see.
And so I'll do some sales work, but then I will get some vacation after that.
So you're a year-round employee of American, and you all
kind of work year-round, commuter marriage
as much as possible,
yeah.
Or get together. Mm-hmm. But you try to get down to Springfield. Is that where you all have a home? Or?
That's where I still have my home in North Carolina that I rent from my parents.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to keep that, and then he's going to keep his home in Springfield, Tennessee. You know.
Talking about the, I want to ask about that merchandising role that you have, which is,
mm-hmm.
Now a lot of buyers don't do that.
Not very many companies.
Not
any other company, I don't think, but American.
Right, and a lot of buyers just maybe work two markets and then they're done.
Mm-hmm.
They might have 6 months off a year.
Mm-hmm.
how does that, is there much interchange with, you know, would an American buyer think about wanting to buy for a dealer? Or?
No. I think we're very proud, you know,
uh-huh.
Proud breed of people, and most people, you know. Of course, that does happen, you know.
Oh, it has. You do know some cases where it has happened, but,
mm-hmm.
But in most cases, people wouldn't do that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I found about, particularly in people, like, very little is discussed about money and so forth. So you might not know whether a better opportunity.
I have no idea what any other company. I know what my husband makes.
Uh-huh.
But as far as anybody else that works with my company or any other company, I have no idea. I may really be underpaid,
right. Well,
but I'm real happy with
okay.
with mine, so I can.
So generally speaking, even though you don't have that information, most people don't seem to want to buck a trend to try to find out about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's kind of curious, you know. According to
mm-hmm.
There's no kind of union mentality or anything with tobacco people.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because there's just such a few of them and they're such a close-knit kind of, or do you really feel that? I mean, I say that, but.
I feel that, uh-huh. Yeah. I feel very close to the people that I work with, my fellow employees.
Yeah.
And
the
way I feel about my company is, you know, I can't think of the word for it, but, you know.
You said you smoke. You obviously smoke American products.
Very definitely. My parents smoke American products. My husband smokes American products.
What about the other buyers and more or less your competitors?
Mm.
You feel pretty, are those kind of people usually on friendly relations?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Okay.
But they don't smoke American products.
No, right.
Your rentals buyer is going to be smoking a rental cigarette.
But I mean, you don't get fiercely competitive or angry.
Not as far as that.
Yeah. Okay. Let me ask you about this merchandising. Is that interesting to you?
We have a sales department which
mm-hmm.
handles most your big outlets.
Mm-hmm.
What we do is try to hit the small country stores,
mm-hmm.
people that may never see an American brand salesman, and encourage them to carry our products and let us hang up some signs.
Yeah. So you actually get in the car and take around your product and want them to stock them.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing some of that kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
Do you enjoy that or like buying
them? Well, I'm not a salesman.
Uh-huh.
I can sell dollar bills for a quarter.
Uh-huh.
I'm just not a born salesman, and that. But I enjoy promoting my company's products,
mm-hmm.
and I enjoy going to the little country stores. Most
uh-huh.
of the time, people are real nice and
right.
are very glad to see a face and real anxious to talk to them.
Are they often alarmed or not alarmed, but surprised to see a woman's face? Because
no,
uh-huh.
because
they must
be
used to that.
Well. A lot of, several companies have women salesmen.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a unusual thing for a tobacco company to have a woman.
The buying part's more unusual.
Mm-hmm.
There's one question I'd like to maybe finish up with, and that is, can you see yourself doing this 10 years from now?
Yes.
Can you?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Even with the marriage?
I hope I can be doing it 10 years from now.
Do you all think about family, or
he has two children from a previous marriage. Mm-hmm. And so
you have a family then, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
But you see this as a career then for you.
Mm-hmm.
At this point in time, you're happy buying.
Mm-hmm. I may not be next week if you got it. I may be real unhappy with it. But at this point, I'm happy.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you talking to me.